Well, I want to thank Robert Young Pelton for joining us. And up next, Charles R. Smith with some incredible stories, including a secret series of FBI planes, 100 planes over America. What is that all about? That's just one of the stories we'll talk with Charles R. Smith about when we come right back. Charles R. Smith, one of America's leading experts on cyber technology, implications for war, terrorism, privacy. He is one of the best, and we're going to talk with him about a number of subjects tonight. Charles, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Thank you for having me on board. I really appreciate it.
In the last couple of days, we just found out that the Chinese have hacked the FDIC for 3 years and that the FDIC kept it a secret. Unbelievable, Charles.
Well, you know, that's a classic. I mean, they even got all the way up to the chairwoman herself. This administration, of course, is very quick to cover up their security failings. This is not the first time that U.S. agencies or entities of the U.S. government have been hacked by the Chinese military or the Chinese government, and it probably won't be the last time.
No.
We've seen, you know, the OPM hack with 20 million records. We've seen hacks against Lockheed with F-35 data. This hack against the FDIC, there's a whole range of agencies, including the State Department, the CIA, the NSA, and others that have been struck by Chinese hackers.
Now, let's talk about the big story at hand that you've been working on. A secret FBI Air Force of 100 planes? What is going on?
Yeah, this was actually uncovered by the North Star Post. And essentially what it is the FBI has created about 10 shell companies. These are basically fake leasing companies, where they have acquired approximately 100 small aircraft, usually Cessna 182s or twin-engine Cessna Caravans. And essentially, they have equipped them with high-resolution cameras, infrared camera systems, and electronic information systems, such as the Stingray cell phone interceptor. And these aircraft are flying reconnaissance missions over the United States.
Hmm.
Now, the problem that I've got with this is I grew up in, you know, during the Cold War, and the U-2 overflew the Soviet Union. The SR-71 overflew Vietnam and China and the Middle East. Well, we're not really doing that anymore. Now we're flying reconnaissance airplanes over America to surveil Americans. And these aircraft essentially are designed to pick up cell phone conversations, get your GPS location, monitor your text messaging, the camera systems, both the infrared, which is quite useful in night operations, can be used to pinpoint accurately both people on the ground as well as vehicles and track them. Now, you would think that maybe this is related to some sort of terrorism scare. Well, 100 aircraft, basically one of the things that goes along with this shell operation, they're trying to make them look like they're ordinary civilian planes. So you can actually go to an official website that pulls the FAA tracking data and see where these aircraft have been. And I've actually put a link up on my webpage, on the bottom of my blog page, to the North Star site, which takes you literally to the FAA tracking data by the tail number of these aircraft, the registration, and you can actually see some of the tracks that these guys have been flying. Even over the past week, a very good example is just on Monday, one of these aircraft overflew San Francisco and Oakland and the Bay Area, and it's a very clearly an electronic intelligence operation path.
But what are they listening for or looking for, Charlie?
Well, they're monitoring Americans without a warrant. This is essentially what they're doing. One of the things that I suspect that they're doing is that they're monitoring these Black Lives Matter movements. But they are also just monitoring, basically. And again, these are very clearly electronic intelligence operations, because you can see the circular pattern of their overflight. It's like taking a pin on top of a map and making 100 little circles as quickly as you can. There's been overflights of Tampa, of Baltimore, of Charlotte, North Carolina, of Chicago, and literally all over America. In fact, one of the flights that I took a look at on the 12th literally followed the Texas-Mexican border, even straying into Mexican airspace near El Paso.
That's dangerous.
That's not only dangerous, that's an international incident. That's actually illegal. It's an authorized electronic surveillance flight, and it is overflying foreign territory. And unless the Mexican Air Force and the Mexican government has given us permission to do this, that's an international incident.
Are these all kinds of planes in terms of sizes?
Generally, the aircraft are small aircraft, like a Cessna.
Little Cessna, all right.
Yeah, Cessna 182 is the most common one.
Prop planes.
They are rather liberally equipped with high-tech equipment, like I said, including the Stingray cell phone interception device.
Might they be drones?
No.
Not drones.
These are manned aircraft.
Manned aircraft, okay.
Yes, they are flying literally manned missions on surveillance operations. I have read of circumstances where the Stingray cell phone has been, cell phone interceptor has been used in ordinary criminal operations. Keep in mind what I'm referring to by Stingray. This is an electronic intelligence device that literally fakes like it's a cell tower. So it intercepts all cell phone traffic. It's not just like one specific cell phone, but every cell phone that's within its range. And this is also an electronic warfare system. It is designed as a national security device. This is the kind of thing that you would equip, say, an EF-18 in the Middle East to try to track down ISIS and destroy them on the ground. That's essentially what it is. It is actually classified as a top secret national security asset.
Does the government deny that it's happening?
At the moment, what they're doing is denying that the FOIAs that are attempting to discover what's going on here, they are trying desperately to deny the American people the information. They are swearing, literally, departments that are issued the Stingray devices with non-disclosure agreements, saying you will not disclose them. In fact, they've even made it very clear that if someone is prosecuted using this information, and their defense attorney brings up questions that could lead to the discovery that the device is being used, that the charges are to be dropped, so they will not be brought up in court. There has already been a numerous documents showing where the FBI has actually encouraged law enforcement agencies equipped with the Stingray device to use it for surveillance purposes, but when they get to court, to use, quote, other means to obtain information that they could present in a case. So, in other words, secretly spy with this thing, but go get the rest of your information after you've done your spying, and you can take a person to court. Now, to be absolutely honest with you, I could see something like this maybe in a terrorist operation. This thing was developed by the NSA. That's the reason why it's so secret.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I've got is a real good example. It's like in Oklahoma, one of these devices was used to track down a kid who had robbed a pizza store. Okay, now you're using a national security device
for a pizza robbery.
Someone is sworn to top secret. You're using that to chase down a 16-year-old who robbed a pizza store of hot wings. That's what he got away with.
And I'm surprised these things aren't equipped with little missiles yet.
Well, they can be targeted directly back. That's what we use them for when they're, say, on an EF-18 or on an F-22. You can target directly back to the exact source, and if it's supposed to be a bad guy, you can put some iron on the target real quick. And that's what really concerns me, because we're seeing a law enforcement agency of the federal government utilizing surveillance aircraft, and I would not put it past them that they would also put them eventually on unmanned aircraft when they can. The problem there is relaying the information from the unmanned aircraft in a secure fashion back to headquarters. When you have a manned aircraft, it's relatively easy to, you know, get whatever you need and then relay that information by voice over a secure radio directly to, say, units on the ground. Well, you know, in this case, it doesn't appear that they're actually being used in investigations. These things are being used for general surveillance. This is a reconnaissance operation. And it's not necessarily with a warrant. In fact, the FBI has objected repeatedly in court and just lost in court, where they were declaring that they could monitor your cell phone and even get your cell phone location without a warrant.
Unbelievable.
So, again, you know, we're looking at a law enforcement agency using a national security an asset, just like literally like a spy satellite or high-tech electronic warfare equipment, to do not only mundane things, but just listen in. What's going on here?
And how did it start?
Well, the use of the Stingray did not really become prevalent until our current president, the wonderful and liberty-minded President Obama, came into office. And then suddenly the FBI gets a hold of these devices, some of which are manufactured by the Hayes Corporation down in Florida. They were originally designed and built for the NSA, specifically for intelligence and national security purposes, and they were equipped on military aircraft or in the CIA or NSA spy systems, whether they were in the ground or in air or in space. Well, you know, this thing has been boxed down to the size of a small briefcase, or in the case of the Cessna 180s, they have a electronic warfare pod literally mounted underneath the aircraft with the antenna system, and essentially these things have been introduced not only into the FBI, but they're in other law enforcement agencies such as the IRS, the Marshals Service. We have also seen them introduced into the state police in some 22 states across the United States.
How low do these planes fly, Charlie?
Down to your local police force. And this is where we have cases of them using the stingrays to monitor individuals who are suspected of doing things such as graffiti.
Graffiti. They're
yes. Okay.
Surveilling.
We're looking at it, like graffiti. I said, a national security asset, high-tech electronic warfare equipment normally reserved for military purposes being used, like in the case of Oklahoma, to capture a guy who robbed a pizza store of hot wings.
And he was probably unarmed.
Yes.
What's this, what's the world coming to, Charlie?
Well, you know, essentially what this tells me, when you look at it from, step back and look at it very carefully, the government is not afraid of Russia or China, as you can see with them letting them walk in and steal whatever information they want to from our computer systems. They are more afraid of the American people. They are more afraid of us than they are of the Chinese army or ISIS.
What kind of data is plane going to get flying over people, for crying out loud?
It's going to get your any cell text. It's going to get your cell phone conversations. It's going to pick up your GPS location coming out of your cell phone.
Do they know who they're targeting, or is this all random?
They can focus in on a specific target, or they can sit up there and pick up anything that's within range. So they can do both.
How long has this been going on?
If your cell phone number is, they can zero in on you. On the other hand, if they just happen to be trolling and listening to see if they can pick up anything, well, why not? And generally, that's what these things are doing. I mean, when you're circling over Oakland for 4.5 to 5 hours, you're going to be picking up a lot more than one or two conversations by suspected criminals. You're going to be picking up everything.
That is amazing. Amazing. Why don't they use helicopters?
Helicopters.
Too noisy?
Helicopters have a different expense. Okay, they're a lot more expensive to fly. They require a lot more training to fly. They're not going to carry quite as much, mm-hmm. quite as far.
Probably can't stand
it. Whereas a nice little light airplane can fly in circles. And we've seen police forces equipped with light aircraft and surveillance equipment being used to track down robbers during the nighttime. That's very common here in along the East Coast. But, you know, again, we have seen the militarization of many police organizations to the point of overkill. A fine example when you bring up helicopters is the NYPD, the New York Police Department, world famous. Just 2 weeks ago, a kid, a 14-year-old, skipped paying his tokens to ride the subway.
How dare he?
$2.40. NYPD spent the next 4 hours with two helicopters and nearly 100 patrol officers trying to track him down.
No way. Come on.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Now,
hold on, Charlie. We're at the top of the hour, the bottom of the hour already. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Cyber warfare. Charles R. Smith, our special guest, hacking, you name it. We're going to take your calls as well as we talk about spying on America with Charles R. Smith. And welcome back, Charles R. Smith with us. We'll get to your calls in a second. Charles, a few months ago, I had an opportunity to interview Ted Koppel, the former ABC newsman, Nightline. And he is truly concerned of hacking into our power grid. As you know, I'm concerned about EMPs and solar flares taking down the grid, but Koppel is very concerned about hacking our power grid. How serious is that subject?
Very serious. We've already seen it happen to a country, the Ukraine, during Christmas. It was despicably easy. And by easy, I mean terrifyingly easy, the kind of easy that a high schooler could obtain the appropriate information and tools and carry out the operation successfully. in the case of the Ukraine, an operator opened an email, which he shouldn't have, that contained a virus. Okay. Now, to explain to the listeners, if you have an email come in that's got an attachment on it and you aren't expecting it, don't open it.
So it's the attachment you don't open, right? Is it okay to open the email?
Usually, but don't click on any links.
Okay.
And be very careful, because if the email is a HTML email, it'll automatically take you to websites and things, or download, say, pictures and stuff like that, which may contain some other interesting payloads. In this case, the email contained an Excel spreadsheet, which the operator thought was being sent to him to fill out, and he opened it up, and inside there was a nice little payload. That payload was better known as the, I believe, Black Magic virus. Essentially, it allowed the hackers into their systems to take them over, and then once they got past the security levels, they were able to literally shut everything down.
Geez.
The only way the Ukrainians could bring things back was to literally go into the field and turn the equipment back on one by one.
So the virus, now, Charles, the virus allows the hacker to get into your system. It's almost like a drill or something like that, huh?
That's one way of doing it. It can also do extensive damage by itself. That was like ransomware is a very good example, where the virus takes all your files and encrypts them with a special key, which only the hacker has, and you've got to pay to get them to decode what they've just locked up on your system. And we've seen that happen all across the world. Again, if you get an email in and it's got an attachment that you're not expecting, don't open it. Contact the person that it's supposed to be from and confirm that it's a legitimate email. Some cases the person may tell you they never even sent you that email, because hackers can spoof your email accounts, in other words, make email look like you and send it to someone else.
How do they do that? I've noticed that, where they literally
is desperately easy to spoof. All you have to do, it's got a thing called headers in it, and literally, you can set it up so the headers, when you send it out, which identify the person where it came from, are fake.
So if somebody wants to steal me, George at coasttocoastam.com, they steal that, right?
Yes, they essentially are stealing that, and even though they're sending it from their own site, it looks like it came from you.
Amazing.
Now, part of this problem is also the power industry. Right now, the frontline software in the U.S. power industry that runs most of the major installations, the power plants, and the grid is Windows 95.
Windows 95.
Right, or it's based on Windows 95.
That's pretty old, isn't it?
Excuse me?
That's old, right?
Horribly old.
Archaic.
As in, like, what, 20 years?
Yeah, that's old.
Right. The security in the number one selling software internationally, manufactured by our friends at Siemens in Germany, the security on that has, and I'll give you the rundown. One, the administrative password to log in and take over everything is hard-coded in the software. Two, the administrative password and login screens are done in the open. In other words, when you key in the password, it's visible. Three, the software to communicate, in other words, say an operator needs to work onto a remote site to change something. The software has no, I repeat, no encryption. So it is done in the open. This is not uncommon for the industry. We're not just talking about power plants, we're talking about nuclear power plants, the power grid, and Mr. Koppel needs to also look at things like the water system, the sewage systems across the United States, as well as many industrial facilities have no, I repeat, no security. If the main password to reset everything is hard-coded in the software, then all the hacker has to do is get a copy of the software, look at the code, and now he can log into anybody who's got it and reset everything, including setting up a section in there where everything he's done, you won't see it, and you won't even know he's there.
That's dangerous.
Well, I'll give you a really good example. I was just doing a security check for a client on some potential software that would be installed on a sewage system for a major county, and by major I mean, you know, almost a million people here in the United States. Well, when I went to the vendor's website, not only did they have a open source copy of the software that does all of the control for the entire sewage system, they also had all of the commands, command codes, and security codes all posted together on their website as an advertisement. So literally, if somebody wanted to shut down the sewage system, all they need is a laptop and a appropriate radio transmitter, and boom, now the sewage system for a major county in the United States is dead. You want to see a city empty itself overnight?
It'll be like that.
You don't necessarily have to shut off the power. If you shut down the sewage system, it ain't going to be very pretty.
Jeez. Charles, let's take some calls here. They're lining up for you. Let's go to Mike in Ohio. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George.
Morning.
I kind of know what Charles is talking about. I mean, I have family that work for water locations, water plants, and they changed over from chlorine to sodium hypochlorite.
Uh-huh.
Because of possible concerns about hacking, if someone got into the system, and if they got in there and no one knew, and then they start adding too many parts per million of chlorine into the water system.
Right.
Sodium hypochlorite is more safer for the human body than actual chlorine. So I totally understand what he's talking about. But what I want to ask Charles about, if he's ever learned or heard of any information from any hackers coming out of Fukushima, and how is everything going with the power plant there, as far as the Japanese government, if they're still remaining silent or not. And I'll take my answer up there. Thank you, gentlemen, for a great show.
The government is still silent out there, Charles.
They're terrified, okay, and that's because the place is a mess. It's a functional equivalent of a Japanese Chernobyl. It is a mess. In fact, they're actually terrified because there are contaminated areas there that are openly hazardous, and I'll give you a very good example of today's modern technology. Protesters using a drone scooped up soil from the Fukushima plant very close in, radioactive soil, and deposited that soil on the roof of the Prime Minister's home.
On the roof?
Okay. Yes, on the roof. Okay, now you see exactly how concerned they are and why they're keeping it so quiet. There is another reason behind the silence. It's not a cyber reason. It's a military reason. One of the reasons why Japan is keeping a lot of these older nuclear reactors functional, and the reason why they seem to have so much fuel hanging around is because that's actually Japan's reserve for building nuclear weapons if, say, something should happen. The basic estimate that I get from my own intelligence sources is the Japanese could have a functional arsenal of about 100 weapons within about 90 days.
That fast?
That fast.
Jeez.
They've already got everything already. All they have to do is assemble it.
Why does it take the Iranians so long?
Well, in this case, that's partially because of hacking a virus called Stuxnet, which was introduced onto a USB drive. And this is another one of those cues for your audience. If you see a flash drive or a USB drive sitting on the ground in the middle of a parking lot or next to a building, don't pick it up and plug it into your computer. About 70% of the ones that are on the ground have been dropped there by people who want to hack you, and they have viruses embedded in them to steal your information the second you plug it in. Well, guess what? The Iranians plugged in the USB drive at their nuclear facility where they were doing the uranium processing. Well, the Stuxnet virus went past the Windows 95 security. Yes, that's what they were using, Siemens software, thank you. And kaboom, suddenly all of their processors went into hyperdrive, melting down and destroying not only the samples that they were preparing, but the actual processing devices themselves, which are costly, as in like hundreds of millions of dollars each, and very difficult to reconstruct. So it put the Iranians back about 10 years. The suspicion was that this was either a U.S. or Israeli or combined U.S.-Israeli operation. The virus is called Stuxnet. You can do scans on the Internet and actually find an extensive information on the Stuxnet operation. It was very successful, and it is an example of how software can destroy real live hardware.
All right, let's go to another caller. Let's go to Keith in Houston, Texas. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Here in Houston, the patrol units, some of the patrol units for the Houston police are using that Stingray device. And although we were told that they would only use it with a warrant, there is no verification process in place, even though citizens asked if they would put one there so that every time the device is used, it would key into a central center and somebody at least would know that it was being used, and that would be some form of verification. But, these guys, these police officers are only human. They're going to use it to check on their kids, where their kids are, or maybe who their wife is talking to, or any other thing. And, the old trust but verify standard, we don't have it.
That's quite right. One of the things that I did when I was working with the FBI was build things called audit trails. An audit trail essentially is a way of verifying who has looked at your information and when did they look at it. And in many cases, it's a legal requirement because of the information that was being stored. Well, of course, this FBI and many law enforcement agencies are now abandoning that little privacy trailer there. And the Stingray, being a national security device, is one of the very first ways to get around these little issues of having to report back to the public. So you're quite right. Without an audit trail, there will be abuse. There will be police officers following their girlfriends, stalking. There will be operations where someone will take advantage of the information either for political or personal gain. So eventually someone is going to get killed, all right? And I'll give you the finest example. When we put in the audit trails, it was an audit trail for your driving records at your DMV. technically speaking, you can go to your local DMV and say, I want to see who's looked at my records. And you should see a listing of things like if you got pulled over, you'll see the police officer who looked at your records, your insurance company, maybe an employer, maybe a credit check. That's average stuff. But if you suddenly see a bunch of checks from places or people that you have no idea are looking at your record, it might be worth you checking out. Well, the reason why we had to put this in was because in California, before all of this was put in place, a ex-police officer got access to the system because they forgot to take his name out of the database and stalked his ex and then hunted her down because she kept changing her location because she was afraid of the guy.
He was stalking
her. He hunted her down and killed her.
Oh, my God.
And that's the reason why it became a national priority. Well, there are other sections of the database that have been misused for political purposes. During the Clinton years, Clinton operatives in the White House went into this database and did scans on potential opponents, reporters, Republicans, to see what kind of criminal and or other records they had.
Well, we just need to watch out what's going on there, Charles. That's to be sure. We're going to come back in a moment with our open line portion of the program now. Charles, thanks again for the update. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.